process. I'm deciding whether I'm
going to. Oh, okay. All right. So, I'll tell you a few things. So the way I figured we would restructure this is as follows. And if I want to leave a lot of time for questions, because I think that's probably most people probably know a little bit one way or another about what has been going on with Chelas and what has more or less been happening. So you probably don't need me to tell you that. And if you do want to know the story, you can buy the book, which is just finished hot off the presses. And it is a triple way endeavor project by myself, my wife, my father-in-law, and it's written very well, at least I can say that. It wasn't me that did the prose. Okay.
Has to do with the halachos, history?
No. It doesn't talk about the halacha. It's a very, very general... I'll put it this way. It's not a general book. It's a book about everything that you need to know about Tchelet in the sense of the history, the rediscovery, so everything that happened in terms of how it was lost, how it was, what it was in ancient times, what it was, and why, what happened with Radzina, what happened with Herzog, what are the issues in terms of bringing it back today, again, in terms of history, and then we digress. And this is, I think, very, very interesting, into the science of Tchelet. We talk about the biology of the snail. Why does the snail make this Tchelet at all? What does it do? How does it help the snail? The chemistry, and the chemistry is extremely important to understand some of the sugyas in the Gemara. And then even the physics. So it's an interesting challenge to think about this for a second. There are virtually no blue objects in nature. There's the sky and the sea, but objects that are blue, there are pretty much none of them. And those that are blue for specific reasons that will not be able to be used as a dye. So I think that this is actually one of the chidushim in the book, that there really will probably, again, it's hard to say in a scientific way that there's nothing, but at least as far as science knows today, there is not even the possibility for there to be another blue dye that's created in a natural process. So, and maybe I'll talk about that also, but anyway, that's what the book is about. Not anything to do with the halacha, not anything to do with the questions that we'll talk about tonight. So that's what I figured we would concentrate more on these issues tonight, and here's what I'd like to do. In a very, very quick way, I want to explain why we think this is real Tchelet from the arguments and the proofs, if you will, for why we think it's Tchelet. Then what I really would like to concentrate on is why people would argue and say that you don't have to wear Tchelet today. And in that, I really want to kind of make that even a dialogue with you, because I'd like to hear what you have to say about that as well. So, without any further ado, why do we feel that this is Tchelet today? So, there are two questions when it comes to figuring out, there are two questions that have to be answered. One question I think that we can answer fairly certainly. The other question I'm not sure that we have an answer to. I have what I think is a suggestion or my opinion on it, but I'm not as sure as on the first question. The first question is, what is the source of the Tchelet? What is the chilazon? What is that? What is this? You know, I'm using the word snail, but I've jumped ahead of myself. What is the chilazon? We know that the Tosefta says, Tchelet min achilazon kasher, shelo min achilazon pasul. Tchelet has to come from a chilazon, so it's not just the substance, but it's the source of the Tchelet, which is important and a prerequisite for a halachically kosher Tchelet. So what is that source of the Tchelet? That's one question, and I think that we more or less can answer that question. There's another question. What is the color of Tchelet? Assuming that the source can produce a wide variety of colors, which of those colors is the correct color for Tchelet? And there's really no absolute way to answer that question, because the only way you could answer it is if you were living at the time and looking at Tchelet. You can't really even really trust what people at that time say about the color, because color is a very subjective thing. What some cultures call green, other cultures, you know, tend to see that more as yellow, right? And this is a very interesting question. So how do you even approach this question of what was the color of Tchelet? And that's, like I said, it's a harder question to answer, but I think we'll make, you know, some suggestions and see if there's any way that we can get to it. According to the two greatest halachic researchers of Tchelet, of course, I'm talking about Gershon Henoch Leiner, the Radziner Rebbe, who discovered, or claimed he had discovered Tchelet at the end of the 1800s, 1889, when he left Poland and he went to Naples to see if he could find this Chila zone, and he found a cuttlefish. Very interesting idea, rejected by many people. But nonetheless, the Radziner Rebbe wrote a lot about Tchelet, and wrote about it before he went searching for Tchelet, wrote about it after he went searching for Tchelet, and altogether there were three very important books that talk about the idea of Tchelet and what are the criteria in some ways for finding Tchelet. The other one who did a tremendous amount of research into this, it was really his lifelong obsession, was Rav Herzog, Rav Isaac HaLevi Herzog, or Yitzchak HaLevi Herzog. I have a beautiful picture of Rav Herzog. I'll pass it around. This is Rav Herzog. I just got this. I actually won it on eBay. This is a picture, a photograph of Rav Herzog on a boat in 1949 when he came to America to meet with Truman. And he met with Truman, and this is on the boat on the way back. Beautiful picture. You can take a look at it. Don't get it too... Rav Herzog wrote a doctorate in 1914 on Tchelet and analyzed the Radzin Tchelet and did a tremendous amount of work. So what they did and how they did and what their ideas were and some of the issues that they had, we'll talk about, maybe we'll touch on, but they both say the same thing when it comes down to the criteria for what is real Tchelet. Again, they're looking for Tchelet, so they had to have some idea of what it is that they're looking for. They had to know when exactly it would be if, you know, that they found it. So, I'll read to you straight from the Radziner, Sfunei Tumunei Chol, which was the first book that he wrote on Tchelet. Im ken, im achar achipus tasig yadenu limtso dam, איזה מין חילזון שיהיה, שנוכל לצבוע בו צבע התחילת צבע עומדת ביופיה ולא תשתנה, ודאי נוכל לקיים מצוות תחילת בלא שום ספק. What does Radziner say? אם אחר החיפוש תשיג ידינו למצוא דם, איזה מין חילזון? So, איזה מין חילזון? He's completely, completely general in what the חילזון is. שנוכל לצבוע בו צבע התחילת. What's the first criteria? What's the first criterion? That it has to be what? Tseva Tchelet. Okay, now that's a question, but let's assume for now that the Tseva Tchelet is the color of the sky. First criterion, Tseva Tchelet. Omedet biyofya v'lo tishtaneh.
Permanent.
A fast, strong dye. V'aday nuchal l'kayem mitzva tchelet b'lo shum safek. That's it. That's all that Radziner says. I need two or maybe three things. One, it's got to be a color of the sky. Two, it's got to be a steadfast, not changing dye. And three, maybe it's got to come from anything that might be called a chilazon. Now, Rav Herzog actually says more or less the same thing. Rav Herzog, it's quoted in one of the articles that he wrote called Hatchelet B'Yisrael. מובן מאליו כי החיפוש אחר החילזון של תחילת זקוק הוא במידה מרובה להגדרת מראה התחילת. Muvan Me'elav, it's obvious that we're going to have to find, if we're looking for Tchelet, we need to know what it is that we're looking for, namely what color we're looking for. Chilazon Shemotzi Tseva Shemar'ehu Hu Mar'eh HaTchelet Harei Zehu HaChilazon She'anum Mevakshim. Rav Herzog, he doesn't even quote the steadfast property. All he cares about is any creature, and I'm going to be general here, let's say any sea creature that gives off a blue dye, that is considered okay for Tchelet. Well, that should be the end of it. We've got a sea creature. It's a Murex trochilus. It lives in the Mediterranean. And it gives off a dye which is blue. So that should put the argument to rest, at least according to the Razina. It's actually a very fast dye as well. It lasts for years. My sisters are 20 years old. They look beautiful. Not faded at all. So that should be the end of the discussion, correct? At least according to the Radziner and Rav Herzog, there should be no more question. We have found kosher Tchelet. Not saying we found the only Tchelet. Maybe there's a lot of things into this. But at least what we have found should be considered Tchelet. Is there anything that you can use to poke a hole in this argument? I mean, one of the things you could say is that you disagree with Rav Herzog and the Radziner. You need other things.
Not at all sure, but no, there are in this discussion many other chazals that when they describe the chilazon, they give other descriptions, something to do with some, a fish that only comes up once every 7 years. There are many, I'm not sure of others,
yep,
but there are other chazals that describe it.
Yep.
And I'd have to look carefully at Herzog or the Razin and figure out if they think that doesn't matter, or a chazal just said in description, or it could be also criteria.
Excellent. So, one of the things that you could say is, I'm not telling you the whole story here. Right, exactly. There are other things that the Radziner or Rav Herzog say, and therefore they might require those as well. For now, do your homework, but for now, let's assume that that's not the case. Let's assume. Now, I want to get to in a second, I want to say there's a reason why Rav Herzog and the Radziner have to say this. And I'll talk about that in a second.
Didn't the Radziner also say that has to be Ezimin Chilazon Sheyeh, so we have to know what a
Chilazon
is.
Well, he's being very general. He's saying Ezimin Chilazon Sheyeh, and take a Chilazon that could mean, let's call it again, any sea creature. If the Radziner can call a cuttlefish a Chilazon, then that really, essentially, he's saying anything in the ocean, anything in the ocean.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the Herzog explicitly rejects the Murex because of the conditions that the Gemara gives.
No, we'll talk about that in a second. Rav Herzog rejected the Murex trochilus because, specifically, it didn't give the right color. That was the main thing that he didn't.
But
right,
he also mentions the other criteria.
He does, but that, at least in this place, he doesn't say. In other words, he pairs away all of the different things, and there are many things. There's a Zohar that says a chilazon is found in the Kinneret. And there's, the famous Tosefta that it comes up once every 70 years, and Briato Domele Dag, and Gufo Domele Yam. And there are many, many different things. Nonetheless, at least in these two places, the Radziner and Rav Herzog pair all that away and say, if I only had these things that fit, that would be good enough. Yeah?
So if it's really so broad that it's any blue dye from any sea creature, how is it ever really lost? Pretty easy to find a cuttlefish or a squid or something very, very general like that.
Well, obviously not. In fact, it's not. In fact, as the Radziner and Rav Herzog were dying to find anything like that, and they couldn't. What the Radziner found, it's true that he found something. First of all, he had to bend over backwards in order to make this brown squid juice into blue, and Rav Herzog rejected it because of that reason. But Rav Herzog wasn't able to get blue out of the Murex trochilus. And there are no things that give off blue dye. That's one of the key things. Let me just say, why is it that they're backed into this corner of saying that all you really need are these criteria? Well, the Radziner says it himself. Right afterwards, in Sfune Tumanecho, he explains why. Why is it that all I care about is the color, that it comes from a sea creature, that it's the right color, and that it's steadfast? Dimimanav shach. אי הקפידו חזל על מין חילזון אחר דווקא, אי הקפידו חזל על מין חילזון אחד ידוע דווקא. Let's say that it had nothing to do with the tosa'a, it had nothing to do with the result. It didn't have anything to do with the blueness or the steadfastness. Let's say it had to do with the fact that it came from that particular creature. And of course, that would be a big problem, because then you have to know exactly which creature it came from. If you didn't know, you would never be able to make chelet. But if that were the case, v'hayinu al karchach mishum dekim lechazal deleka ba'olam min chilazon acher or b'ri acheret shenuchal letzboa v'damot tzevat chelet she'omedet v'yafiav lo tishtameh. But he says the Gemara never does that. The Gemara says, what is this chilazon? It's a chilazon. What is tchelet? Tchelet comes from a chilazon. Very, very, very general descriptions. What the Radziner is saying is like this. And Rav Herzog says it even more specifically in his doctrine. There is something that is pasul for tchelet. And that is kala ilan. Kala ilan, in the Gemara talks about this fraudulent dye that was the same exact color as tchelet, but it's not kosher for tchelet. And that comes from a plant. It's indigo. It's not so important what it is. But it's a plant source that gave fake tchelet dye identical to tchelet, more or less. The Gemara goes out of its way in a number of different places to say that that is unacceptable, it's unsuitable, it's not kosher tchelet. But the Gemara never goes out of its way to say, but be careful, because there are really two snails that could give you this identical tchelet. That one's kosher, that one's not kosher. So, if there were two snails that gave the same kind of tchelet, the same kind of color of dye, the Gemara would have had to say that. There's only two possibilities. Possibility number one, there's only one snail, and we've found it. It has been found. Again, if we're assuming that we found a chilazon, I keep using the word snail. We're assuming that according to the Radziner and according to Rav Herzog, there is a sea creature that is giving us the right color, the right thing, it's a dye. Rav Herzog says, if there were two of these, then the Gemara would have had to say, use that one, that's okay, that one is not okay. The fact that it doesn't say that means one of two things. Either there's only one, or any of them are kosher.
Could it just be like, indigo is easy to find, and it's very cheap, and the Gemara says, okay, watch out for indigo, but the Gemara's not going to say, watch out for this exotic snail, which you can finally...
Why? Why find? Wouldn't the Gemara say that? No, it's good. It's exactly what I wanted to get to. Why wouldn't the Gemara say that?
Why wouldn't the Gemara? What, only caution indigo and not something else?
Yeah.
I think the Gemara could be. I think that could be like the Gemara is warning you from people who are cheating the system. And
they say that, okay, I'm saying. But let's go on with the idea. You're saying that the Gemara warns you against Kala Ilan, but it doesn't have to warn you about that second hypothetical snail, which is giving identical dye as Tcheles, but I'm not going to warn you against it. Why not? Is it kosher or is it not kosher? You're saying it's not kosher, but they didn't have to warn us against it. Why? What possible reasons could there be for them not to know about it? That's an easy way. If they never knew that there was a second snail, and we're coming along, or somebody's coming along and saying, I have a snail, the snail is found in some subterranean cave in New Zealand, and I'm coming come along and say, look, you see, I found the chilazon here. Chazal never could have known about that. So so that is definitely one reason that they didn't know about it.
Also, the Gemara brings it up in the context of people who try to look like they're doing mitzvahs but doing a cheaper version of it. But if this is either just as rare or rarer, then it's not cheaper, then nobody would go for them.
The Gemara brings Kala Ilan up in two places. One of them is faking people out, selling things that don't belong. The Gemara brings it up in another place, which is wearing kilayim and tzitzis. Okay, so if you're wearing Kala Ilan as your tcheles, you're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. If you're wearing real tcheles, you are allowed to. I can accept the fact that the Gemara would say it's rare, it's cheap, so I don't have to talk about it with respect to people faking it, because nobody would would fake a really expensive one. But with regards to Kala Ilan, in terms of Kalayim, it would be exactly the same problem. If it's not kosher, the Chazal should have said, if Chazal knew about it, they should still have said, no, wait a second, you can't use that one either, even though it's rare, and even though it's expensive, and even though it's everything else, but it's not Tcheles, and be careful to put it on your talus because it's Kalayim and it's Isidore Raisa.
If nobody uses it, they don't have to...
If nobody uses it. Okay, so again, we're in two places. Number one, nobody uses it. Number two, they didn't know about it. Any other reason why Chazal wouldn't have to warn us?
Everyone would have been, maybe, whatever the other thing was, if it existed, everyone was aware what it was, and for whatever reason, there wasn't as much confusion about that as there was about something else.
Okay, in other words, so everybody knew that there was this other sea creature that was giving this blue dye, but everybody knew that it wasn't Tcheles. Okay.
For whatever reason, it had properties that maybe it looked different enough than people.
Now, let's close the loop. Why? Because we have proof, I think, incontrovertible, how do you say the word?
Incontrovertible.
Proof that Chazal knew about the Murex truncates. How do I know that? Because there's archaeological remains of Murex trunculus on Har Tzion from the time of Bayit Sheni. In the middle of Yerushalayim, you find these snails in Yerushalayim. We do have a little bit of a piece of cloth from Herodion, from Masada, from around the time of Herod, which is, again, Bayit Sheni, end of Bayit Sheni. Could be that you could push it into Bar Kokhba times, but still, we're talking about the times of the Mishnah, right?
Yeah, where the one originally found was dated to the time of Herod?
The snails?
No, the cloth.
The cloth, it's not clear. It's somewhere...
Tzvi
Kored, yeah. Right. It was found on Masada, and it's dated somewhere in the first century. So you could say it's the beginning of the first century, and it's Herod. You could say it's at the end of the first century, 130 is Bar Kokhba, but somewhere around there. But whatever the point is, there is blue murex being dyed in Eretz Yisrael in the times of the Tanaim, and there's no way that you can get around that fact, and there's no way you can get around the fact that these snail shells were found in Har Tzion, in Ir David, in Yavna, in all of these different places you find these snail shells. And so to argue that Chazal did not know about the Murex trunculus, or to argue that they didn't know that it could dye a blue dye, is something I think that is very, very difficult to argue.
Is it possible that it necessarily wasn't the right shade of blue?
Okay, so that's a good question. Now let's take that, and that brings me to the next question. So I'm gonna leave that now. There are other reasons why one can assume that Tchelet was around, and I think that you can. Again, we'll talk about it in many, many places. I really urge you to read those chapters in the book. You don't have to buy the book; you can also borrow it. But read those chapters, which talk about the ancient history, and I think that you'll see in a pretty conclusive way that the Murex snails were known all over the Mediterranean. All over the Mediterranean. This was the most important commodity in the ancient world. It would be like somebody coming along and saying, how do I know there really is, how do I know that people nowadays know that there's such a thing as gold or diamonds? I mean, that is how ridiculous it is, in a sense, to say that people didn't know about Murex. Murex were written about everywhere. Murex were everywhere. Murex were the most important part of the commodity for 2,000 years in this region, in the region of Israel. So it's almost impossible to argue that Chazal didn't know about it. What about the color? What about the color? Well, so let's ask the question, what is the color of Tcheles? We all think, or do we all think, that it's sky blue? Not everybody does. Tzvi Koren argues that it's more of a dark blue. Dr. Zeiderman argues that it's a purple or a violet.
What time of day?
Green.
Green Rashi.
What time of day?
What time of day? The sky? Who knows? There is no way to answer this. That's why I was saying there's no way to answer this question. There really is no way to answer this question. Most of the poskim feel that it's a blue dye. Blue as in the middle of the sky in the middle of the day. Sadia Gaon says that. The Rambam seems to say that. Ketar or Akia, right? It's in the middle of the day. And that was certainly the belief that Rav Herzog had and the Radziner had. And in fact, Rav Herzog's main problem... Who was it that was asking me about Rav Herzog's problem? Rav Herzog's main problem was that the snail, this Murex truncula snail, which he knew was all over the place in ancient times, didn't give off a blue dye. It gave off a purple dye.
Where did he write that?
In his doctorate. Look. Rav Herzog writes...
No, you mentioned a second ago. The
Redziner never mentions the Murex.
He definitely knew about it. That's true.
He definitely knew about it. I'll show you why he knew about it.
So why didn't he choose that?
I'll tell you why he didn't choose it. Because of the color. And the reason why I think almost definitely... What is going on here? The reason why I'm pretty sure he knew about it was because he had a huge influence on him was the Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael started working on this even before the Redziner Rebbe worked on it. I'll bring you the quote later. I'll explain. The Tiferes Yisrael responds to a German Hebraicist Christian who wrote a dictionary of Hebrew biblical terms in the early 1800s. His name was Gesenius. Gesenius, in his entry under Tcheles, writes. Not under Tcheles or under Chilazon. Right, under Tcheles. Writes that it comes from a Chilazon. The Chilazon is the purpura shnek, which is a purple snail, and it gives a violet hue. Right? It gives a violet. Violet is purple blue. Rav Lifshitz, Terence Yisrael, in the Kupat HaRochlin talks about this because he wants very much to find Tcheles. He has a big problem with the fact that without Tcheles you can't build the Beit HaMikdash because you need the Big Day Kahuna, right? And the Big Day Kahuna need Tcheles, and if you don't have Tcheles, you don't have a Beit HaMikdash. And the Tiferes Yisrael tries to understand what exactly Tcheles was, and he quotes Gesenius. And Tiferes Yisrael is writing in the 1850s, 1860s. And he writes there, I could find it, but it's, you know what, give me 30 seconds, I'll find it, I'll read it to you exactly. Tiferes Yisrael writes, here we go. וכאין זה כתב גזניוס שהתחילת נעשה מדם מושל מסל הנקראת פופורה שנק בצובן מדמו פופור בלו נוטה לוויולט. And all this is in kind of Yiddish writing, but that's what he's basically saying. So that's everything that I said. וכתב עוד שנמצא בים האמצעי, it's in the Mediterranean Sea, והקליפה של גדילה עם הבריאה יצרו, everything is the same as what the Tosefta seems to say. But however, he says like this, אמנם במה שכתוב שבדם החומץ צובעים purple blue, דהיינו dunkel blue, בזה לא נשמע לו. We cannot accept the fact that תחילת is purple blue. This is against our tradition. Dehainu, himmel blue, sky blue. Bialkarchach oto shabrul shehizkir gazenius, acherhu, it's not the real chilazon because it doesn't give blue dye. This is a very, very important thing that Tiferes Yisrael writes because it heavily influenced the Radziner. I'm sure the Radziner knew very, very much about what Tiferes Yisrael did because he argues with him on a number of points about Tcheles. So he read very, very carefully everything that the Tiferes Yisrael wrote about Tcheles. And therefore, the Radziner never entertained the issue of the purple. Although Herzinger writes that the purple of the Roman Empire was probably the treles, but he couldn't have been, again, this treles, this snail could not have been, any snail that gives a purple violet could not have been it. Rav Herzog takes exactly that same argument, and Rav Herzog knows not only from Gesenius, but Rav Herzog knows from a number of different scientific sources that the snails that come out of the Mediterranean give a purple or a purple blue.
He tried very hard to take the cuttlefish, right, and turn it to blue.
Yeah.
Right? He burnt the carbon, turned it to blue. He could have done that also with, theoretically, with also, you know, before he could have, you know, also burnt it.
Maybe.
Turned it to blue.
The same
argument he uses to call it black, right? He uses all, you can say it for the, or you could, like, add one to, you know.
I don't have an answer for that. I don't know why the Radziner decided to do what he did. The only thing that I do know is that this is an unbelievable example. We're here in YU. This is an unbelievable example of Torah Mada that you've never found before. I don't think I can think of any example. Torah Mada is a game usually of the Torah coming, you know, Mada is right, and we have to figure out how to make Torah fit into it. Okay, that's basically the game that most of the time we play in Torah Mada. In this instance, the Radziner and Rav Herzog came along and said, Treles is blue. And don't tell me now, listen, all the archaeologists, all the chemists, everybody in the secular world was completely convinced that they knew what Treles was because they knew the source of the Treles. They knew that it was this snail. They knew that for 100 different reasons, from archaeological evidence and from other evidence. And Rav Herzog stood his ground and said, I'm not going to accept what science is saying because Treles is blue. Rav Herzog never changed his mind and never backed down from that. He died in 1959, and that was the end of it. When science finally figured out how to turn this snail purple into blue, Rav Herzog eventually was vindicated. Because Rav Herzog was right. Rav Herzog challenged these scientists to say, you are thinking that it's a snail. It's up to you now to figure out what you've got wrong so that you can figure out and be, like I'm saying, that Treles is really blue. Herzog stood his ground, and eventually scientists had to figure out that they were wrong. At least that's what we could see. There's a great picture in here where what we did is we took the exact same amount of snail juice, the exact same amount of wool, the exact conditions, and every last little parameter was exactly the same. The only thing that we changed was that one was exposed to sunlight and one was not exposed to sunlight. And this is the kind of thing that the Tiferes Yisrael would have seen. This purple, I don't know how much you can see it, but you'll come up later. I don't know if you can see the difference. This is unbelievable. The difference between the beautiful, bright purple and magnificent sky blue, and the difference is sunlight. And they didn't know that. If Herzog couldn't have known it, nobody could have known it. And that's an important point. Let me move on to two more quick points, and then I want to move on to the other more interesting issue. Is that the only possible thing that we know? It's Tiferes Yisrael, the Rambam? Or is it only Jewish tradition that tells us that Treles was blue? Or is there possibly some other way that we could have known Treles is blue? There is one interesting... There are a couple of different things we could say. There's some archaeological finds. But one interesting thing, follow along with me. It's a little bit of a trip. And I don't exactly understand it. So I'm saying it over, but... You'll have to. I'm not a scholar in ancient Akkadian, but it is the way it goes. In Sumerian, you wrote with cuneiform, right? Stick figures or whatever. when the Sumerian language came over into the Near East, they kept the stick notation cuneiform. But eventually, what was called whatever it was called in Sumerian, the same letters, if you will, came to represent what that object was in the language of Akkadian. Okay, so it's hard for us to understand, but imagine that this was BOX, box, right? But in, let's imagine, we'll take Hebrew, okay? Okay, so this is Kufsa. So the letters BOX would have been pronounced Kufsa. And then what happened is, these letters, the alphabet, if you will, was given over to English. And the same letters, BOX, that were pronounced Kufsa in Sumerian English, let's say, are now pronounced box. It's the same letters. They represent the same object. In one language, you pronounce that in the language Kufsa, and in the other language, you pronounce that box. Okay. The stick letters that represent, there is no word for blue in Sumerian or in Akkadian. There is the phrase which is lapis lazuli like, taking lapis lazuli, which is a blue stone, and turning it into an adjective. Lapis lazuli like. Okay? Something that looks like lapis lazuli. In Sumerian, that word is uknu, and it has a cuneiform representation. In Akkadian, and in especially later Akkadian, which is a Semitic language, that same stick representation is pronounced takiltu. And that takiltu, of course, is what became, in Hebrew, techelet. So the same word which meant lapis lazuli like, and that's blue, it also is the same thing to use to describe the sky, is the same word as techelet, and therefore there is an equivalence based on this linguistic chain of events between lapis lazuli, the sky, and techelet. So that is an argument that has nothing to do with Torah, tradition, or anything else, that seems also to indicate that the color of techelet was sky blue.
What are the figures? Akkadian had a symbol-based language, even though...
It's cuneiform.
What are they?
Oh, they're in the book. I have a picture. I'll give it to you later. Sigzagina, with a little six underneath, if that means
anything.
Well,
they look like what they're supposed to
Yeah, they're in there. It's
even Hebrew did for a while.
No, not cuneiform.
Not cuneiform. Oh, this is before the alphabetic.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about way before. So, okay. So let's say, for the time being, that we've proven that we have real techelet. Why wouldn't you wear it? Again, you can argue that I haven't proven it to you. That's okay. But let's say I did prove it to you.
No Masorah.
That's it. Exactly. I'm going to characterize this in three. There are three reasons why people say that you shouldn't wear techelet. One of them, two of them even are fine. One of them gets me very, very frustrated. The one that's fine is people who say you haven't proven it. Great. Okay. We can argue, we can discuss, I can prove it more, prove it less. I accept that. The second one is Masoret, which we'll talk about in great detail. No tradition. I can argue about that, I can talk about it, but at the end of the day, I'm just a doctor. I'm not a rav. Great Rabbanim will decide what great Rabbanim decide on the issues of halacha and the issues of ashkafa and the issues of the fundamental questions about Judaism, and everybody will decide according to them. But here's something that frustrates me. When people say, don't be mebalbel my moach, if you will, with proofs from archaeology or from chemistry or from linguistics or from cuneiform or from this or from that. Well, I want to see it. Show it to me in a sefer that's been sitting on the shelf of a base medrash for 100 years, for 500 years, and then I'll accept it. That frustrates me. Because, and there are many people that say this. There are many people who have shiur on Wayu Torah who have said it. And that is a frustrating thing to say because, you know, I just read a beautiful book about Newton. Newton, when he was young, he started to look into all of the different things that had been written about science and about different theories. And up until Newton, basically, science was figuring out what Aristotle said and how you could understand it, how you could apply it. And Newton wrote in the margin of one of his notebooks, he wrote, "Aristotle is my friend, but truth is my best friend." And what does that say about what it is that we're doing here in this endeavor, you know, trying to understand God's word, which is what we're all about, right? Are we saying, oh, that may be true, but I'm not willing to listen to that. That frustrates me. What is this, a game? You know, if we're trying to find out what is true, if you want to tell me it's real tcheles, but for halachic reasons I can't wear it, that's okay. That's a discussion we can have. But to tell me I'm not even going to allow you, I'm tying your hands behind your back. These are things that you're allowed to think about. These are things you're allowed to look at. These are things that you're allowed to admit as evidence. To me, it's very, very frustrating to hear that argument. But the argument of Asorot is an interesting argument. And I had the opportunity this week, I just came back from, I'm not even going to say it because I didn't ask permission to use it, so I'm not going to tell you where I was, I'm not going to tell you who I spoke to, but I happened to be speaking to a Rosh Yeshiva of a very prestigious yeshiva. I saw him at a kiddush, and I said, after 2 minutes of small talk, I said, "So what does Rosh Yeshiva think about tcheles?" And he said, "Well, you know, I'll tell you, now I can quote verbatim what the discussion was, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Tell me, when do we have to leave? When do we have to finish?"
Whenever the shear's done.
So, the Rosh Yeshiva said back to me like this. "You know, I learned both by Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Both Rav Moshe and the Rav would have said, or did say even, that the tradition is what's koveya. The tradition is what we accept. Masoret is what we accept. And that's all we have." He gave me an example. He said, "You know, everybody knows that scientifically what we call oats today is not really oats. And therefore, you know, scientifically you could argue that you shouldn't be allowed to eat matzahs made out of oats. Or the opposite, you should be allowed to eat oats on Pesach. It's not chametz. But we reject, even though we all know that scientifically that's correct, we have a tradition and therefore the tradition trumps science." Okay, so I said back to him, I said to the Rosh Yeshiva, I said, "I'd like to respectfully say three things in response. Number one," and I quoted him the Beis HaLevi. You all know the Beis HaLevi that the Red Zinner quotes? This is a very, very, very important source. Kills me every time I have to put it in. The Beis HaLevi says, you all know, I'm sure, that the Rav Soloveitchik wrote and spoke in one of his famous Yahrzeit Shurim about the need for Masoret, and spoke and quoted his great-grandfather, the Beis HaLevi, that without a tradition, we can't introduce anything into halacha. That the Rav said that is without question. The question is, did the Beit HaLevi say that? Did the Beit HaLevi say that? And the answer is, we'll never know, because we obviously don't know what the Rav knows internally or knew internally in his family. However, in Ein HaTcheles, in the Radziner's book, the Radziner writes that the Briska Rav had sent, the Beit HaLevi had sent the message to him. And I'll read to you what he writes. Umehem agon av betin brisk the Beis HaLevi delita מסר כל טעמו ונימוקו בדבר טיעונו במשרת התחילת לאחד ממיועדינו. Somebody who is, I guess, a Radzin Chassid went to ask the Beis Halevi, what do you think? And he wrote, he comes back, not only reporting what the Beis Halevi said, but at least according to the Radziner, and, you know, he's Kashal Hades, I guess, the Radziner, Sheikhtov Yomar Lanu Mishmo Bizeh Arashon. In other words, the Beis Halevi said, this is what I want you to go tell the Radziner Rebbe about his Tchelas. And he says, the Radziner Rebbe lo bier b'dvarav mazot matza achar shenishkach. He hasn't given me any indication what was lost and what's new, what new information he has. Imitziat hadag o hotzat zva'o. What is it that you know, Mr. Radziner Rebbe, right, that I don't know or that other people don't know? Is it that you have discovered a new fish? Is it that you've discovered a new process to take the dye out of the fish? Raka harei asher yidbarezo. If the Radziner Rebbe will tell me what it is that is new, hayinu azeh, hayab azeh davar nishkach v'humatzah. That is, I knew. What is it exactly that was lost and that he found? Listen to these words. I'm not making them up. Az niyeh mechuyavin l'shmoa elav u'lilov shov. If the Radziner Rebbe can tell me what is new and what he found, what other people didn't know but he does, then we will be mechuyav to listen to him and to put on his tcheles. But if he's going to tell me, achein, im ne'emar she'adag hazeh haya b'metziut. But you didn't find the fish. Everybody knew about the fish, right? V'gam hotzaat tzva'o haya yadua b'chol zman me'azmanim. And everybody knew how to take the dam out of the fish. There's nothing new about the process. If that is the case, v'alkol zeh lo lavshuhu avotenu v'avot avotenu, and the Vilna Gaon never thought, even though he knew about cuttlefish and he knew about the process to take the blood out, and the Rambam and the Rama and everybody else, nobody else thought that this was the was real tcheles. Hareu ki'ilu yesh lanu b'kabbalah u'mesorah me'avotenu ki zeh hadag u'tzva'o einenu achilazon v'atchelet af shehu b'chol ha'simanim she'saminu chazal. That this is not the real tcheles. It says, if, says the Beis HaLevi, I have a tradition, if you're not going to tell me anything new, and the Vilna Gaon knew everything that you know, and he didn't think it was tcheles, so, im kol hakavod, Radziner Rebbe, it's as if I have a tradition. I have a tradition that the Vilna Gaon knew everything that you knew, and he didn't think it was tcheles, so I'd rather go with the Vilna Gaon. He didn't think it was tcheles, I don't accept it. That's very, very, very different than to say that you need, without a tradition, you can't introduce anything into halacha. Very, very different. Not only is it different, it's the opposite of what the Rav says. Right? Because again, listen to that word. If we can find something that was lost and is now being found, right? Then, hayinu aya bazet, right? What would you do? Az niyeh mechuyavin lishmoa elav ulilav shom. So that is something that I think that people have to challenge whoever it is that say that, at least that the Beis HaLevi says that you needed a tradition. The Rav obviously is enough of a gadol that the Rav can say whatever he wants to say. And of course he can have every opinion and halachic idea that he has. Question is, did the Beis HaLevi say that? Which is a different question. So that was the first thing that I answered the Rosh Hashiva. The second thing that I answered the Rosh Hashiva was this. I said, okay, so you're saying that there is a tradition and science goes against the tradition and you're changing the tradition because based on science. I said, I can agree to that, not only in halacha, in every legal system you have such a thing called precedent. When things change, there are things on the books in the American system of law that are there because of the mitziut that was in the 1700s, and they haven't changed, and legal systems change slowly if they change at all. And so I don't have any problem with that. But we're not talking about that situation. We're not talking about a situation where you have a tradition, and science is now coming along and telling you what you're doing. what you think you're doing is that's right is not right. It's not that there's a tradition that we're trying to change. There is no tradition. There is no treles. Treles is gone. And now we're trying to say, so the argument from tradition is misplaced, I think. And the last thing I said to the Rosh Hashiva was, in spite of the fact that the Rav and many of the Talmidim of the Rav do hold that you need this tradition, and there are many, many Rabbanim or Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik who say that you have to, that you need a tradition, without that you can't put on Tchelas, and in spite of the fact that there are probably, I don't know, but there are probably many, many Talmidim of Rav Moshe who probably also say the same thing, there are Talmidim of the Rav, even great Talmidim of the Rav, who do say that, you know, you should put on the Tchelas. And I said that there are also great Talmidim of Rav Moshe, Rav Etengler, and Rav Rappaport. Nobody is closer to Rav Moshe than Rav Etengler and Rav Rappaport. And they do wear Tchela. So I said, so it's not at all clear that every Talmud of the Rav holds or should hold that you don't have to wear Tchela, and every Talmud of Rav Moshe also should hold that way. So he answered to me something back, and this is really what I would like to get your feedback on. He said to me, our whole religion is, the foundation of our religion is tradition. And if we lose that tradition, then everything is gone. We have nothing. He said, Shabbos is Shabbos because we learned what it is from our fathers and our teachers, and they learned it from their teachers all the way back through to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the minute that we start playing around with that line of tradition, then what do we have left? And then he said to me something else. He said, and if I go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after 120 years, and he says to me, why didn't you wear tchelas? I'll answer to him, because my Rebbe didn't wear tchelas. And that's what I have. My whole religion is based on what I've accepted and gotten from my Rebbe. And that was the end of the discussion. I didn't want to push it further. But I have something more to say about that. First of all, what do you think about that?
It's true that you have a sorrow from your Rebbe, but your Rebbe's not living your life. You're not living through. Obviously, everything we have is from our Avdi Tosh Torah Mecha. Everything we have is from the Rabbi Shabbat Peh and the source of the Rabbanim. But we might say we're religious because we're religious. The Rabbis aren't making us religious. So, like, it's not a strong time.
What do you think?
Just because he brought up the Shabbos example, I'm not sure this is a good parallel example at all. But it just got me thinking, what if, let's say, we know that all Chazal kept Shabbos, and we would touch ourselves, but somewhere along the line, we sort of lost some of the traditions for certain malachas that were prohibited. We didn't really, we sort of lost what Shabbos was about. And then, sort of, we rediscovered things and figured out, this is malacha, this and this is prohibited. Would people really say, like, no, you, again, it's not a good example because active and passive. Would people really say, no, what we do right now stands because the tradition, we're lacking a tradition for long enough that we know exactly. Back then, when people really say, no, you don't do it, or this isn't the halakha, whatever you're doing now, just keep doing that, I feel like in any other area of halakha, that would never be the case, except here where people argue that.
Yeah?
I mean, it could be a defense that if you do start accepting archaeological evidence, do you bring yourself into a little difficulty, let's say, you face with historical criticism? Because if you're going to say that, no, we believe archaeology can paint an accurate picture, then wouldn't that give a lot more credence to whatever historical criticism saying this story, that story didn't have inclusive archaeological evidence? It's very strange because you have on one hand we're saying we know what happened with Marsh Trankless, but when it comes to other narratives that we tradition happened, how can we selectively choose not to accept archaeology?
Yeah.
Well, to respond to that, it's not a question of the Torah is one thing and science is another. It's that we don't know based on Torah, so we're using science because the Torah doesn't tell us what it is. And also, just to respond to your question, Mesorah has to respond to the Matthias that we have in every generation. There's a Mesorah of what to do in a situation where we don't have something that we think is Tchilas. But if the Matthias changes, then the Mesorah doesn't tell us what to do.
So,
Yeah.
It's not true that our forefathers didn't wear tchelis. They did wear tchelis. And then up until a certain point, they stopped wearing tchelis. But had they had access to tchelis, they would have worn tchelis. And so our Masora is to wear tchelis.
So all of these things. And I'll tell you what I thought about afterwards. And maybe I'm naive, right? But I would say, I'd like to paraphrase Newton again on this, right? So, the Mishnah Brura is my friend, but God is my best friend. And I kind of felt like, is that what it's about? You know, you've got a pasuk that you say every single day, twice a day, right? And on the other hand, you've got this issue of, well, maybe, I don't know, you know, the tradition, this and that. You're sitting there, you're saying, I have, and that got into the second thing that he said, and I'm going to say this again, maybe I'm being fluffy and naive, but, okay, so you can go up in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be able to punish you because you've got that little box checked. But what about if you got up in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you said this to him after 120 years, when he asked you why you are wearing tchelis? And you said to him, I'm wearing it because I believe it's a mitzvah, and I want to keep as many mitzvot as I can. This is a mitzvah that for 1,300 years people didn't keep, and for 500 years before that, people gave their lives to keep it. And I think, maybe, just maybe, I have the option and opportunity to keep that mitzvah. Now, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to you then, yeah, but you know you're wrong, I think that would be, I would live with myself better then. If I had, again, where is that desire to do what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us and writes in the Torah, as opposed to saying, I have an excuse not to? I don't know. Anyway, that's my own personal feeling on this. I'll just finish up. If you're looking for a reason not to wear tcheles, you can come up to me afterwards. I can give you a whole bunch of reasons. Like I said, the Zohar says that it's in the Kineret. Somebody just wrote to us this week. The Zohar. What are we going to do with that Zohar? He read that there are saltwater canals. Caves under the Kinneret. He wants us to do an experiment to take some Murex trunculus and try to grow them in these underground caves, because that'll prove that the Tzar is right. I'm not making fun of the Zohar. I'm trying to tell you, the Zohar, if you want to accept that Zohar, you have every excuse. You check it off. After 120 years, you go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Zohar said no. And again, if you want to have other reasons, there's Masoret, there's this, there's that, there's always plenty of other reasons. The question is there also, on the other side, the opportunity to be Mekayim HaMitzvah D'Oraisa, that is Shkua Keneged Kol Mitzvah Shebatorah? And that's not a Medrash, it's not Im Lovan Garti V'Tari Mitzvah Shamarti. This is, we read them all Tov Zechat V'Kol Mitzvah Hashem, right? So, anyway, so those are a little bit of the things, my thoughts on.
Can I present two arguments I don't necessarily agree with, but sort of playing devil's advocate, that these are what I've heard from other people. I'm just curious how exactly you respond. So first of all, I've heard, let's say, my Rosh Yeshiva, when I was in Yeshiva in Israel, basically talked about how, let's say, I don't wear tchelet because Rav Nevensal doesn't wear tchelet, and a lot of the Gedolim don't wear tchelet, and if you wear tchelet, who do you think you are? That they know Torah, and they know what they're doing, that they think that it's not enough of a reason to wear it, then why should you do that? That's one argument. And then also, I'm not totally familiar with the details, but I've sort of heard a halachic explanation explained out some idea of Baal Tosif, and if you really do, this is more relevant to the question if it's the right tchelet or it's not the right tchelet.
Right. So I've never heard of Baal Tosif being an issue.
It's probably Baal Tigra.
Shechter says Baal Tigra is a bigger issue, and if you're not going to wear tchelet, you should not wear tzitzis. But but this issue is a very good issue. Listen, when I started with this whole thing, we're talking over 20 years ago, I went to Rav Lichtenstein, and I went into Rav Lichtenstein, and I said how excited I figured he'd be that we found Tcheles. And he wasn't the first person I went to. Rav Rappaport was one of the first people that embraced what we did. And Rav Schechter also, early on. But when I went to Rav Lichtenstein, he was very, very, very severe with me. He said, how dare you, these are the words, how dare you do something that your Rabbeim were against? So I was taken aback by that. I didn't know what to answer, but I regained my composure and said to him, Rebbe, if there was something that you knew to be absolutely true, and you knew that this was what should be done, and this was real, and this was true, and the Rav said that you shouldn't do it, what would you have done? So he calmed down a little bit and said to me, I guess I would do what I believed was right. However, I could never imagine being so certain about anything that I would go against the Rav. So, which is a perfectly exactly what Rav Lichtenstein would say. He did say. So, and the other thing is this. I'll put out this argument, not because I will put it out, because I like to believe that everybody is true to what they believe and what they're saying they accept and their arguments are legitimate. It happened to be if my brother-in-law made a very good point. I was just talking to him before this year. He said to me, he says, to many people, not to all people, yeah, your father, yeah. He said to me, to many people, this argument is absolutely disingenuous. Absolutely, the whole idea of tradition is disingenuous. He says, not to everybody, not maybe to some of the Talmidim of the Rav. But he said, to all the people who say, we need a tradition, we need a Masoret, we need a this, we need a that. If Rav Nevensal or Rav Kanievsky or Rav Elyashiv would come out and say, okay, you know what? Yala, Tchelet, let's wear it. Would they have 1 second's hesitation starting to think about, is it tradition, isn't it tradition? Wait a second, we can't put it on because it's not. They in 1 second would jump and put on Tchelet. So the argument about tradition, to many people, not to all people, is simply the argument that you made. The Gedolim don't do it. If the Gedolim don't do it, then we won't have to do it, and we don't do it. I can't argue with that argument. But if that's the case, then what are we doing here in the yeshiva? Go take pictures of the Gedolim. Look what the Gedolim do in every possible situation, and do what they do. What do you have to learn? What do you have to learn Gemara? What do you have to learn Halacha? If your whole life is all what the Gedolim do, so figure out what it is the Gedolim, read Maisios, read Sipurim about the Gedolim, and then you got everything you need. I just want to say, you pointed out a point though about archaeology and whatever, but again, I'm left with that question. Again, maybe I'm naive. Is what we're doing true or isn't it true? If it's true, then give me an argument from criticism or from science or from whatever it is, and let's answer it. Just because maybe somebody is going to give me an argument that I can't answer, what do you mean? Do you believe Rav Shechter would say that? Or Rav Shechter would say to you, we're doing what's right. And if somebody gives me an argument, I'm going to give them a better argument back. I would hope that that's what we believe.
We're saying that someone's giving us an argument about treating Neurotranquilus and we're rejecting the archaeology, but we're doing the exact opposite when it comes to certain biblical narratives. We're saying, no, we're going to reject whatever the archaeological conclusion is. So that's, I guess, my question. It's the exact opposite kind of argument.
But again, I'm not rejecting anybody. I'm saying let's put all the evidence down in front of us and make up our minds. Yeah. Yeah.
It's more like a personal question. Like you mentioned, like, you've been involved in this project for almost 20 years. Like, you know, try to present it. Like, Tehillim is one of the Gedolim you mentioned before of the Riyasha, of Moshe Sternberg.
There are many, many Gedolim there were. Zalman Nechemi Goldberg is as big a Gedol as they come, right? I mean, again, I'm not going to put people off against it. I'll just, weigh Gedolim cards. But I always find that there's an interesting thing. Rav Aviner is against our Tehillim. Right? And Rav Aviner, in one of, you know, he writes all over the place. He writes different Shabbos, and he writes, I don't know, you can find 3 or 4 or 5 different things that he's writing. In one Shabbos, he writes, somebody asked him a question about Tchelet, said, no, we don't wear Tchelet because the Gedolim say that we don't wear Tchelet. The next Shabbos, it was a question of another issue that's big in Israel called Tanakh Begova Inayim, if you know what that is. Can you really say that the people in the Tanakh were people that are like us, or were they in such a great level that they didn't? It's an argument that different people have. Rav Aviner wrote about that as well, and Rav Aviner writes, the Gedolim all say that we should learn in the Shita of not Tanakh Begovainayim, that we should not learn that way. And he says, who are the Gedolim that say you shouldn't learn that way? Rav Dov Lior, Rav Yoshua Shapira, Rav Drori from Kiryat Shmona, and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking to myself, they all wear tchelas. Rav Aviner now he's giving me a list of people who are Gedolim who I can go to and yet. Anyway. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, yeah.
I was curious if anybody was looking for any sea creature that was giving more of a black ooze, kind of like Tarashi's, or to any other opinion that's a different color. Or if we've seen, or if we've discovered that and then rejected it because of the liver vein.
If you've got trouble with a sea creature that's giving you blue, let's be honest. Is there anybody that's going to say that Tchelos is black or green? You can call a couple to Rashi, and I don't understand what Rashi says. And Rashi is obviously has to be taken seriously. But if anybody started coming around with a green thing or a black thing, and saying this is Tchelos based on Rashi, 99 other people would come back and say, yeah, but you have all those other sources that say that it's sky blue. So the fact that that we have a sea creature that gives us a sky blue, and people reject it, imagine what they would do if you had green and whatever. And the bottom line is, we don't understand Rashi. Rashi's colors, not our colors. Rashi, what Rashi understood as certain colors. I don't even know what to say. I don't know what to say. What?
Rashi was in France, and he's also lived in France, and if you look at the sea there, it's kind of green. So when it looks like the sea, so...
Once again, this is in the realm of one of these issues that I don't have an answer to. There's nobody who has an answer to. Rav Herzog, again, we can look to the people who were most involved in Tchelos. Rav Herzog felt sky blue. Rav Zinner felt sky blue. The Rambam, Rav Sadia Gaon, and a bunch of other, and it's very small. All of them are saying himmel blue. And the coincidence that this snail, which was definitely the snail that was used to produce purple and blue in ancient times for the Romans and the Greeks and the Minoans and all those, after all of that holding out that the Radziner did and Rav Herzog did, finally is now able to give a beautiful, absolutely magnificent blue dye. By the way, that blue dye is found on fabrics that are 2,500 years old, some of the oldest fabrics in the world that we unearthed in Tazarik in Russia. Blue like the day that they were made, blue like the sky. I think, you know, that's... I don't think you have to look further than that.
Can I just bring up, I guess, a fundamentally related issue that's also regarding archaeology, which he was kind of hinting at, but it's a little more relevant than what he said even, that there's the ideas of, I think, what the Chazon Ish has to say about different fragments in the Kairoganese and things like that, and the Gemara they found, and whether or not you can paskin it, and whether or not we paskin like the Meiri or not, because we didn't have his Sfarim for such a long time, and then that maybe there is a halakhic basis for not necessarily following things that were sort of lacking for a period of time, even if it's right there. And it's
again, I think that it's two different, completely different things. In the one case, we have a great tradition, and now we're coming and attacking it from science. In the other case, we have absolutely nothing. We don't know. For 1,300 years, nobody knew what Tchelos was, and they didn't have Tchelos. And now we're trying to reconstruct it. We will use every possible bit of information that we have in the halachic sources, outside of the halachic sources, to try and figure out what it is. This is a thing. It's like you said, we know that there was Tchelos. We know that there was this thing called a chilazon that gave this color and this dye. And we don't know what it is now. It's not arguing like, you know, this is not a question of something where you had exactly what the Beis HaLevi said. If I had a tradition in one way or another, a negative tradition against it, a positive tradition that something else was it, then I wouldn't even be looking for it, and it's like oats. But we don't have anything. We just have to do our best. I just want to say, if anybody wants the book, I'm going to be selling it for very, very cheap, $15.
So oh, I think if you guys want to go wait, officially Night Seer started, so if guys,
okay.
I guess
yeah, yeah. If anybody wants to, you know what, maybe that's a good idea. We'll take a break. If anybody wants to talk afterwards, we can. If anybody doesn't want it now, I'm going to leave some of the copies with Yaakov.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm your tutor, by the way. I'm the other side of the mail.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, pleasure.
How do we answer the question of Zohar that says that it's
can't
or the Midrash that it comes up?